we want to invite you to the Intentional Motherhood Retreat 2025. For the past 2 years, hundreds of mothers from around the country have gathered with us for a weekend of worship, teaching, and connection, and really to seek God together. And we can't wait to do it all again at this year's Motherhood Retreat, this time in Portland, Oregon, October 23rd through 25th. We know that motherhood is both beautiful and it's hard. It's both life-giving and exhausting, and it's full of both joy and sacrifice. It stretches us and forms us more than anything else. This retreat really is a spiritual formation retreat for us mothers. We aren't going to give you a bunch of tips and tricks for how to be a better mom, but we are going to press into how motherhood gently leads us to spiritual formation, how relationships are essential for the journey, and how our connection with God spills over to our connection with our families. This retreat is for women who desire to be mothers someday, all the way to grandmothers and anyone in between. Mothers of babies and toddlers, young children, teenagers, and even adult children. This intergenerational gathering is a chance for all ages and stages of mothers to learn from one another, to encourage each other, and to simply be together. Because motherhood isn't meant to be done alone. The late Dallas Willard said spiritual formation can't be a private thing. It is a matter of whole life transformation. You need to seek out others in your community who are pursuing the renovation of the heart. And that is exactly what we are going to do together. So come join us October 23rd through 25th for the Intentional Motherhood Retreat in Portland, Oregon. We can't wait to see you.
You're listening to the Intentional Parents Podcast, brought to you by Intentional. Intentional is all about spiritual formation in the family. We desire to bring biblical hope and practical help. Enjoy this week's conversation. All right, welcome back to the Intentional Parents Podcast. Elizabeth, Bill, Diane, we are all here today. We want to talk about five necessities of being a calm, regulated parent, even in the midst of chaos, and what that means.
To which we all chuckle.
We all laugh. We're all laughing because I think if you're a parent and you're alive, you're feeling this. And that last phrase, even in the midst of chaos, which is a big deal. We're going to get into that today. We want to say thank you to everyone who has rated and subscribed to the podcast, whether that's on Apple Podcasts, Spotify. There's a growing group of people on YouTube. So thank you for everyone that has rated and subscribed there. If you haven't left a comment or had a chance to do that on any of those platforms, that is such a helpful way to say thank you. And it's a helpful way for the word to get out about Intentional and all that we're doing. We also have our marriage retreats coming up soon. So you're going to be hearing this. And in the next few months, everyone that was able to get some tickets for the marriage retreat, we are so excited, praying over that content, building it. We've been having meetings after this. Elizabeth and I have another meeting. Are we still keeping that meeting?
Yeah, let's do it.
Darn it. I was hoping to do something else. But anyway, we have a meeting. We have a meeting after this.
To figure out what we're going to say.
No, we're excited. No, we have. No. We definitely have direction. Nonetheless, we're getting prepared. Emails are going out. People are asking questions. It's going to be great. So we're really looking forward to that and really looking forward to all that God has in store. But we want to talk about how to be a calm, regulated parent and how do we really actually do this? And just in case anyone's wondering, just as a reminder, Phil, Diane, Elizabeth, myself, we are family. We're doing this thing together. And Elizabeth, you were raised by your mom and dad here, but we also have kids and you had kids at one point that there was chaotic moments and maybe it took the best of you and maybe your anger took over and maybe you didn't respond the way you wanted to consistently, ongoingly. And so we want to talk about that and have a conversation. And Diane, this interestingly enough, the topic of this podcast came from something that I didn't even know I said. So I'm really glad that you brought it up because I was like, oh man, I don't actually believe what I said, but I'm glad that you caught it. Yeah. No, this is actually really good. It's a kind of a fun story. So maybe just start us with where this kind of originated as an idea of like, oh, that's a thing.
I think we were having a conversation before one of our podcasts because we always spend about an hour yep. talking together and praying about what we're going to say yeah. and not say, and you know,
getting everyone to stop talking to actually record. Mm-hmm. We yeah. just had that problem.
Yeah. yeah, sometimes it takes longer to do that part, sometimes. Even though we've, you know, by that time we know what we're going to talk about. We've all yep. done our individual study, and you know, to be honest, to be perfectly honest, I thought the only way to be calm. What did you say? What did you calm, regulated parent when my kids were growing up? If
yeah.
is if my kids were calm and regulated,
yep.
and if my life was calm and regulated, and mm. since that rarely happened, mm-hmm. I think that idealism a lot of times got in the way. Mm. But you said something about you were wondering if with teenagers and their big emotions and their extremely intense way of being for several years, if you had to match their intensity mm-hmm. in order to be able to get through to them, because it feels that way, right? Like mm-hmm. they're saying things too strongly, too harshly, with too much in order to be calm and regulated, mm. too much intensity. And what is the best way to respond to them mm-hmm. with the same amount of intensity? Or with calm and quiet, because it mm-hmm. seems like they don't listen. They mm-hmm. can't hear you yep. when you're calm and quiet. And I just pondered that for a long time mm-hmm. and just thinking, what is the truth there? And really have come to the conclusion, which seems rather obvious, but experientially isn't obvious, that meeting them with calm and quietness of spirit is more effective mm. in the long run. Not mm-hmm. in the short run. But we don't live in a world that's calm or kind yeah. or compassionate in intense disagreements. Mm. So I think it's an emphatic no. We do not need to meet our children's intensity in order to be heard by them.
Yeah.
And that sounds very idealistic. It kind of is. But this conversation is more about how do we meet them instead?
Yes.
And I
yes.
just happened to be studying the Sermon on the Mount for actually several months now. And Spurgeon, way back in the 1800s, had come up with five characteristics that we want to see emerge in our lives so that
yes.
our kids are drawn to Christ mm-hmm. rather than put up barriers against yes. them or put up barriers against us.
Yep. And what yeah. we want to talk about with that as an idea, just to set this up, is those five necessities really yeah. actually are five different characteristics of humility.
Yes.
Or the word meekness, or as mm-hmm. Phil pointed out right before we started recording, the word gentleness in the,
yes.
In the New American Standard Bible. And so that's a really interesting thing. So that's really where we're going to focus our attention yeah. is what are those five things? We're going to talk through those five things. Elizabeth and I recently heard it said that you are the container of calm.
Yeah.
For your kids, that. Like you are the container to stay calm in and contain their emotions, even to an extent in the midst of chaos yeah. mm-hmm. and not even contain them like you can control their emotions. But when they're freaking out, it is your job. It is our job to actually
possess the calm in the room.
Yeah. Basically. To actually do yeah. that yeah. in a deep way. And so mm-hmm. I think that's actually a super helpful mm-hmm. framework for what we're trying to actually accomplish mm-hmm. because and that's really hard. Like, let's just be yes. totally transparent.
Really hard.
It mm-hmm. is so easy to say that. And last night or the night before or whatever, I wasn't even doing that, right? Like, it's so easy to just tip over into mm-hmm. match the energy of the chaotic moment yeah. because it's just so hard or you're so tired. Or for me, I don't know if this is your experience, Elizabeth, and I'd wonder for you and Phil and Diane if this was the case, but it's often just very surprising to me. Their huge emotions catch me off guard. Mm-hmm. And that is like really dysregulating to me when it's like everything's fine. And then there's a massive blow up mm-hmm. and it's so quick and loud and sudden. And just the other day, sweet Sloan, I have no idea. She was just sitting at dinner talking and she just like looks at the window and she just spits on the window. And I was like, oh, what is going on?
Like a big spit.
Like it was pretty cool. I was like, that's pretty impressive. That's not what I said to her. That's not what I said to her. I over-responded for sure. I was like, what are you doing? Why are you spitting on the window? Like, what is this? And that was dysregulating for me. And then she's like crying because I over-responded. But I'm like, you spit on the window. What are you doing? You're not like a child. Like, she's a child, actually. But she's like, she's a child, but she's like seven. And you're like, hey, I mean, I think we've figured out the rule. We don't spit in the house or on the window. And truly, she wasn't doing anything purposefully wrong. I think she just had a lapse of judgment. She's like, the window looks fun to spit on. It's just, she just spit on it.
Wanted to see if she could hit it.
Yeah. But that, like, that messed with me, which then messed with her, which set off this chain reaction of chaos. And then all of a sudden, we're not living in this peaceful place. So anyway, that's just one, for instance, that is in real time of how this plays out.
It's very real. Plays out every day.
Plays out every day. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think let's actually start going through these. We have scriptures for each one, and we have, or at least for a few of them. Mm-hmm. But I think it's going to be really important that we actually highlight what these five are, and really talk about how we actually live into them. So if you, again, we talked about the word humble, humility. We talked about another word that is used often in scriptures, in the NIV especially, ironically, is meekness. But how do we become those people of humility, and how do we actually become and stay calm, become and remain calm in the midst of chaos?
When our kids are not.
And we're really referring to Matthew 5, verse 5, where Jesus says, blessed are the gentle or humble or meek, depending on the translation, for they shall inherit the earth.
Yeah.
And I think it's important we understand this is not just advice. This is Jesus saying, if you want to flourish, if you want to inherit the earth, or which has to do with be satisfied with life, even in the midst of hardship, because the Beatitudes are sent, he was speaking to a hillside full of people who are experiencing genuine oppression and unfairness, and life was hard for them. So he's saying, you want to flourish in the midst of these hard circumstances, which sometimes our homes are those very places, right? You know, Sloan spitting at the window, or a teenager being too intense or pushing back too hard. It feels like almost an oppression sometimes. You respond with an indignant kind of a way of being. But he's saying, if you want to flourish in those circumstances, be humble. Stance, a posture of humility will enable you to flourish. So it's not like we're doing it because we want to be the best parents in the world. It's because we actually want to be flourishing in the midst of parenting.
Well, and I love that the word is humble, because it's not be perfect, respond right every time, always have what it takes, have no wounds that you're responding out of. Like, no, it's just be humble. Be humble about what is coming out of you. I also think, when I think back, and I think you would agree, I'm curious if you guys would have had the same experience. When our kids were, when all of them were little and they were upset or dysregulated or coming unglued, it wasn't a big struggle for me to stay calm. I mean, I would have moments for sure. But it's been much harder as they've gotten older. Because in my experience, as they've gotten older, that's when I've started I know myself a little better, but I'm more aware of how I'm kind of pre-programmed to respond to certain things. And I have fears that come in when they're responding to me a certain way, because I don't want that to be a pattern of behavior for them. And just all these thoughts and feelings, physical sensations that I didn't have when they were young, but are much more present now, which I think even goes back to humility of, I have two choices of what I do with that. I either can respond in humility of like, wow, there's a lot coming out in me that is new, and I need to be curious and humble about that. Or, I mean, I guess three choices. I can shame myself. Or I can make it their fault. And not actually examine myself.
Or you can kind of do all three at once.
All of them.
And it's actually, I think, important to highlight the first thing that you have to be, number one, is humble. So we're already talking about it. So we're already kind of like halfway into this first thing. But one of the first ways to stay calm and regulated in the midst of chaos is you have to be humble, because you have to be honest with yourself that you yourself don't always possess the ability that you're asking your kids to possess.
Yeah.
So that's often good. I'm asking my kids to possess something that I myself am not possessing in the moment.
Yeah.
And that can be very hypocritical, and they feel that. They don't even just give you feedback about that. Like, they just feel it and they know it's like, it's off. And so humility to actually hear that you're not operating the way you want to, and humility to it, be honest with yourself about like, okay, this isn't the way I actually wanted to be. I needed to be different. And whether that's from your kids or from your spouse, which is the context in which we're talking about, that takes humility, because no matter what, like, this one's super hard for me, because I'm always like, because Elizabeth is pretty emphatic about correcting in the moment, and I'm pretty emphatic about that not being a good time for me, and I don't do well when she's doing it in the moment. Afterwards, I can
correcting
hear it more.
Correcting you, you mean? Like, correcting me, pointing like, out
if I'm doing
responding.
Something wrong in the moment, and she's coming to me, and she's like, you don't want to respond that way. That's not the way you want to be. And I'm like, I know, but I'm not in the space right now to be like calm enough to like hear you in a way. And so
you need a minute.
We have to work through that. Like, that's another way that we have to work through it, because it's not easy, because she's right. That's not actually how I want to be. At the same time, I am being that. So it's that tricky thing of like, I'm doing the thing I don't want to do, and the thing I want to do, I'm not doing. It's that Romans, you know, seven stuff that's really hard. So
yeah, really think tricky. Of the Proverbs, a gentle answer turns away wrath. And I think we forget that, because we often meet the wrath of each other or the irritation, wherever it is. And, you know, that's kind of a spectrum, right? You know, it's anger.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All the way from irritable.
Yes.
Or look, or rolling the eyes, or to like all out fury. But a gentle answer turns that away. It just allows the other person, including our teenagers, including our children, including moms in the midst of it. And even towards ourselves, I think sometimes we do a lot of shaming because we're kind of prideful. Like, we feel like I'm better than that. When in reality, after a while, you begin to see a pattern and say, no, I'm not. For me, a lot of it was the very unfortunate stance of being determined I wouldn't be like my mom. who was so wonderful in so many ways. And unfortunately, I'm not wonderful in many of the ways that she was, but hurt me. And then there's a pride that goes in. I'm not going to yell at my kids. I'm not going to this, the other. It did not work out very well, as I'm sure Elizabeth could very gladly attest. A few times it was just, you know, you squelch, and then boy, watch as the volcano blows, and you're completely humiliated because you think you're better than that.
Yes.
But
that's good.
Really, humility is knowing I'm not. Yeah. I'm not capable of responding in the way of humility, and Jesus must undertake for me. And then your kids get to watch that. Moms can't do this. Dad can't do this. But look at, she did it one out of 10 times. That's kind of the gospel, and we forget that. We want to be all perfect, and we think our perfection is required for our kids to follow Jesus. I think that's a mistake. I think our kids follow Jesus because they see our shadow side, our consistent failure, and they see Jesus slowly, week by week, month by month, year by year, actually changing us into different people, into people of love. And I think that gives them hope that he can do the same with them.
Yeah. And I think a key to that, because I believe everything you just said, a key to that is we have to be willing to speak it out loud.
Yes.
Because yes, they're going to observe a lot. So much is just modeled, good and bad. They're going to observe it. Yeah. But how much more powerful if we're willing to speak it out loud.
Yes.
And to, you know, we use the language of repair all the time, but to be able to say out loud, hey, I did not respond. It was a chaotic moment and I did not stay calm. Yeah. I didn't model for you what I want to model for you.
Yes.
And I'm sorry.
Again.
And God, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Because that is going to be their lived experience.
Yeah.
If they have kids one day, or even if they don't, they will be in chaotic situations, but especially if they have kids someday, they will be feeling the rush of emotions when they're teenagers, in their face being disrespectful, or hormonal mood swings are happening, or like that's going to be their lived experience too. Absolutely. There's nothing new under the sun. And if we can model for them what to do with all that comes up by dealing with what comes up in us, not just what comes up in them.
Then we give hope. We give great deal of hope.
Yeah.
Phil, what are you stewing on? I see you stewing. I'm excited to hear what you got to say.
I've lived a lot of thoughts listening to you talk. You know, so Diane just said, I'm not going to be like my mom. Mm-hmm. And it's the I, okay, because the opposite of humility is pride.
Yes, there it is.
I heard it said once, the middle letter of the word pride is I.
Yeah.
So it's not something as a follower of Jesus. I mean, there is our will is involved, but if we just think I'm going to be humble, we're going to fall flat on our face because we're going to think we're going to do it on our own strength. So I think what we're saying is this is something that happens when we're filled with the Holy Spirit, that we're able to more consistently, not perfectly, but more consistently live it out, which is why Ephesians 4 says we're to walk in humility. So walking is step by step by step. So I think it was John Mark said something like, my best and worst parenting moments were all unplanned because as we're saying, you never know when your kid's going to, you know,
spit on the window,
face or criticize you. And I think, Elizabeth, your kids get older, they're more vocal telling you what you did wrong. Yeah. When you're little, they think you can do nothing wrong. And when they're teenagers, they'll tell you that you can't do anything right. And so there's a reaction and pride reacts. You know, I know I react when corrected. Even if Diane says, you know, you really shouldn't have handled it that way. You shouldn't have spoken to me that way. My flesh is, you know, so that's pride. Pride reacts when it's corrected, and then pride excuses, you know, it excuses instead of accepting
or
mistakes,
blames
or blames others. So when with our kids, we get, we have the opportunity to model what humility looks like. And so I think for us as parents, you know, we have to come to Jesus first and say, you are the humble one, you know, Matthew 11, come to me. He says, come to me. I'm gentle and humble of heart. And, you know, take my yoke upon you, you know, just my way upon you. So that's what we're talking about. But I was thinking we all want to be used by God to point our kids in the right direction, to shape them. And so I a thought that came to me was humility is the beginning of usability. So if you want to be used by God, you have to be humble, but humble, humility is such a catchy thing because I heard once, humility is the one quality that once you think you've got it, you've lost it. I'm so humble. I mean, I'm just the example of humility. I'm in my read through the Bible, I'm in Numbers. And just this morning, I memorized this a long time ago, Numbers 12:3. Now, Moses was very humble, more than anyone on the face of the earth. God says that about him. That he was, and look how God used him. Now, he wasn't perfect because he lost his temper. And he was disciplined for it. He didn't get to go into the promised land. Joshua did. He got to see it from afar. So he's such a good example for us because he was, God says he was the most humble man on the face of the earth, and yet he wasn't perfect. So I think, you know, parents shouldn't beat themselves up because they blew it, you know. But they still need to walk in humility like Ephesians 4 says. And then in First Peter 5 is the same thing. It says, God is opposed to the proud, but gives grace to the humble. So you don't want God opposed to you, you know, because you want his help. You want the wind of the Holy Spirit in your sails, but he gives grace to the humble. So when we walk in humility, then we receive his power. Humble yourselves, therefore, under the mighty hand of God. And so I think that
that's beautiful.
Jesus is our example, and we can be our example to our kids. But we're going to blow it. And when we blow it, that can be a good thing if we ask our kids forgiveness. You know, and how many, I mean, I heard you say when we were teaching last week in Chicago, you said that's the one thing I do more than anything else is ask my kids forgiveness. I
and
do it every day.
Still true.
And I'm saying, and that's why Diane says you're the best father she knows, you know, which offends me every time she says it. Because what about
well,
me?
Well, you can ask Elizabeth if that's true.
But
you don't have little kids.
I know. I'm just joking.
You're the best pops she knows. That's for sure.
But you live that out with your kids. And I think you're actually teaching them the proper way to apologize when you blow it. So anyway, humility is is the beginning of usability. So if you want God to use you in kids' lives, that just this is a quality that is produced by the Holy Spirit in you as you die to the self life and say, Jesus, help me.
I think.
And when you trip up, Proverbs says a righteous man falls seven times but rises again. God just says, okay, let's get up. Mm-hmm. Just like you do with your kid when they trip. Okay, you skinned your knee. Mm. Let's go. You know, you don't say, what an idiot. You skinned your knee. You can never walk with me again. Of course not.
I think for parents, that's a really important thing to say. For parents, humility is the key to usability in your kids' lives. Yes. If you want to be used powerfully in your kids' lives, it has to start with humility. So that's an important piece. Do not forget that. The second thing is you have to be gentle. So what's another necessity to be a calm, regulated parent? Well, you need to be humble, but then you need to be gentle. And interestingly enough, we talked about this or mentioned it for a second, but that word translated humility, it's translated humility, meekness, or gentleness.
Yeah.
And so, or gentle. So that's an interesting reality that in the word humility is this idea of gentleness. As most of you know by now, this entire podcast was made possible by the generosity of our legacy builders. Intentional is a crowdfunded nonprofit made possible by the generosity of everyday, ordinary people like you and like me. Yes, we have some people who give monthly to legacy builders in a large dollar amount, but we desire to invite a whole new group of people to give at $10, $25, or even $30 a month. If you're like me, you most likely already pay $20 a month for Netflix, $10 a month for Apple Music, $5 a month for Spotify, and various offerings. Would you consider giving monthly to Intentional at $5 or even $10 a month? Our dream is to see ordinary people step up and partner with us at a financial level and see this work integrated into families all over the world. So as you listen to the podcast, would you prayerfully consider joining us as God is stirring in your heart? Will you partner with us, even if it's just for a few dollars a month? Thank you so much for considering joining. Enjoy the rest of today's episode. And if you're interested, go to our website, intentionalparents.org, and click on Give. Yeah. And well, being gentle is
pretty hard to be humble and like harsh at the same time.
I think you're
like
sure.
It's like almost like this byproduct of a humble spirit is words flow out in gentleness when it's coming from a place of humility. And I've been pondering this a lot lately, just with especially with young kids, but older too. It's like the idea of how do you be gentle, like whole idea of kindness and firmness. How do you be gentle, but also you have to hold boundaries with your kids? Our kids need boundaries to feel safe and secure, but they also need a whole lot of gentleness.
Yes.
And I think that's what we're learning right now is, man, our kids need both.
Yeah.
So much. They need both. They need us to be really gentle in how we communicate really firm boundaries.
Yes. Yes.
We were talking to a couple last night about this. We were at dinner and we were talking about the different roles that we end up playing. You guys have talked about this, but especially as the kids are getting older, it's like they will push her on so many things. And then in many ways, it's my role right now, which I don't also love. I do not love this, but it's like the buck has to stop with both of us. But really, at the end of the day, it will end up stopping with me primarily because with mom, there's always like this, well, maybe she'll change her mind. Maybe we can talk her into it. And that's not a Elizabeth thing or a Diane thing. That's like a mom. It's a universal mom thing. I remember doing this to my mom. And even psychologically, this is a real thing. We're taking this class right now. We're learning so many things about OCD, anxiety, all this stuff. And this is a universal psychological truth that.
So, well, somebody brought that up at the class of like, because it's parents who go and was saying, well, it won't be an issue if dad's home.
Yep.
And we're just kind of looking at each other and the woman teaching the class immediately. I wish I'd written down what she said.
It was really funny.
But she just basically said, oh, that's always the case. And here's why. And she pointed to that moms are just inherently more nurturing. Their kids naturally want more reassurance from their mom.
Sure. Okay.
Like, and to her, it was just interesting to see her, this clinician. I mean, she's got her doctorate. She's like brilliant, specializes in anxiety and just to have this, oh yeah, well, that's really normal. Like, don't fight that. That's normal.
Yeah, but
I like looked over at him. I'm like, it's not just because I'm weak and not holding boundaries.
I don't think that's why. But all that to say, that's a role that we end up playing where I have to hold the line.
Yeah.
And I don't always do it well in the sense of gentleness, because there's a line where it's really weird where they will sometimes think gentleness means weakness, mm-hmm. that I'm not being intense. I'm just saying calmly, like, nope, we're just not going to do that. Yeah. Almost like that is permission to, like, maybe we got him. Maybe we could just push a little more. And then I don't change. And they're like, oh, this is, it's almost like this weird juxtaposition sometimes that the gentleness, although they need it, sometimes doesn't always translate as serious, which probably is because of failure on my own part. But I also think that it's an interesting dynamic because I want to be really gentle, but sometimes they will push until it's like, okay, well, here's the deal. I've said no like 15 times. So I'm really not changing my mind. We're not open to appeal about this. We're not open to have this discussion. This is one of those things that we're not going to keep opening.
Yeah.
So I know that's really hard, but you're going to need to deal, you know, like.
But that's firmness with the gentleness has to make your children feel safe and secure. And if you don't do that, if you forget to be, if you just inherently just want to be gentle and nice, then somebody else is going to correct their behavior and not out of this
calm
view of love for them, their peers, their teachers, other authorities in their life. Mm-hmm. It's not a kind thing to not correct your kids.
Yeah.
So it's just what we're saying, don't scream at them.
Yeah.
Don't come down hard. Yeah. Don't use too harsh of language.
Yeah.
But they need to be corrected. That's the training that we're doing.
It's how you do it.
Yeah.
So it's interesting. We figured this out. It just happened naturally, I think. But you know, in our intentional parenting film series, we talked about the teenage years that we switched roles.
Yeah.
Diane said, you know, I became the quote bad guy, which is the wall, which is what you are right now.
Yeah.
But you know, that's not the right way to say it. You become the firm wall. And she goes, I get to be the good guy. So, well, this is why your dad is saying that, you know. Yeah. So she explained me to the kids. So I just think that's the way God wired male and female. He made them male and female. Yeah. And yes, you know, when it's the nurturing ability of a woman is just beautiful and tender. But so I immediately thought of Proverbs 15:1. So I love Proverbs. This is all in Proverbs.
Mm.
All of it. A gentle answer turns away wrath.
Yes. Yes.
A gentle answer. So that's it doesn't mean you don't give him an answer. You're giving him an answer. No. Mm-hmm. No means no. And that's all no means, but you do it. But a harsh word stirs up anger. So if you say it harsh, it's going to stir up. And then down in a few verses later, a soothing tongue is a tree of life.
Mm.
So I think it's just how we speak. And Jesus' way is the gentle way instead of, you know, the way of self-assertion, which is back to Matthew 5:5, the gentle, blessed are the gentle. It's refusing to live a life of self-assertion. I want my way and I'm going to tell you this is what you're going to do because this is what I want. Mm. It's the opposite. The kingdom way is a gentle way, but truth is still truth and you're still the parent. And so to answer in a gentle way, it will turn away the wrath. Yeah.
Makes me think of, you mentioned Jesus, and I was just thinking of all the gospel stories we have of, you know, I love that the gospels, everything's taught in story and we see how Jesus responded to people and that teaches us so much. And then we see how he taught people and he taught people in story with all this relatability. I just fascinated by that. But I was just thinking of the woman caught in adultery and we know the beautiful story and how the accusers flee because of whatever Jesus wrote on the ground. And then he says to her all the details about her life and says, now go and sin no more.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't shame her, but he also didn't say, now go your way and try to slowly get out of how you're living and slowly start to live differently. I mean, it was a very clear, but very gentle. Okay, now go and sin no more.
Yeah.
But you can just picture his tone was probably very gracious and gentle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But very clear.
Yeah. And that moves on to, I think there's a perfect segue to the third thing, which is patient. We have to be patient. So there's humility, there's gentleness, but then there's patience. And that one is a little bit tricky sometimes because it's hard to wait and to be patient with the, some mm-hmm. of the different stages that we all are in, not just mm-hmm. our kids, even ourselves.
Yeah.
I was talking recently. Well, it wasn't too recently. It was a while ago now, actually, probably like a year ago. I was talking to my therapist and I remember him saying, I was, you know, talking with him about being frustrated that certain parts of the things I've been working on have taken so long to actually just become normalized. Like,
you mean like in your life? Like
in my life, like changing certain things.
Responses to things.
When you're going on an inner journey and you're like, okay, I want to work on these different facets of my own personality with the Holy Spirit and God, I'm asking you, but I'm also learning how I'm wired. And you know, you're learning all these different things of how you operate so that you can be formed in the way of Jesus in a deep way, you know, it's like real change. And I was just kind of noting, complaining really of like, this is just so frustrating. I feel like I've been working on this thing that we've been talking about a year. We talked about this a year ago. You gave me the same advice and the same direction a year ago. Why are you giving it to me again? Why am I still working on the same thing? And he just pauses and chuckles a little. And he's like, well, now you can understand and appreciate how true change just takes a very long time.
Yes.
And I think that's an important piece to this, because I think you have to have patience towards your kids. I think you have to have a lot of patience towards yourself too.
Yeah.
And
your spouse.
And you, yeah, your spouse. And you have to have grace and patience on the fact that you're not where you want to be. Like you said.
Yeah.
The humility and the admitting, the mm-hmm. admittance of like, I'm not as good as I thought it was. Mm-hmm. But being patient with the fact that you're not where you want to be is also hard because you have to be patient because you have to see it kind of constantly. Yeah. And so I think the patience piece is very important because I see a lot of people that shame themselves because they're not somewhere they want to be. And because they can see it or name it, they think they should be there. But that's not always the case. Like just because you can see it, that's step like minus one. Like you're, that's like the very, that's like bottom barrel. Like you can see it now. Now you've got to do all the work to actually start climbing the ladder, to actually implement that into your body, into your central nervous system, into your natural responses. Exactly. And that's usually through lots of failure.
Yeah.
So I think having patience in your own self, towards yourself, but especially towards your spouse, towards your kids, it's such a key if you're going to be a person that's calm.
It is. And if you're not being patient with yourself, you're not going to be patient with others. Yes. That's for absolute certain.
That's so true.
Yeah.
I have a couple of scriptures about patience.
Please.
Can I throw them in or did you have one?
Yeah. Well, I have a thought, but it doesn't matter what goes first.
Well, first of all, again, God is patient. He's, you know, the old King James word is long suffering. He suffers long. He's so gracious. The Lord is gracious, compassionate. He's so, but in 2 Peter 3, it says, God is not slow about his promise, as some count slowness, but is patient toward you, not wishing for any to perish, but for all to come to repentance. Think how patient God is with me. So then I need to turn around and do the same thing. But you know, in James, I'm not a farmer, but it uses farming as an example. It says, be patient, James 5:7. Be patient, brothers, until the coming of the Lord. Well, that means every day. This is something that I strive towards. And then the farmer waits for the precious produce of the soil, being patient about it until it gets the early and late rains, you know, staring at the flock. Come on, come on. No, waiting for the rain, the early rain and the late rain. You too be patient, strengthen your hearts, for the coming of the Lord is at hand or near. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, there's just that long perspective. Mm-hmm. The Lord is patient toward us. You know, a day is as a thousand is one. So I think this is something that we need to look at life, step back from it and look at it. Yeah, that was a skirmish. I blew it with my kid today, but it's not the end of the world because this is a long, journey, you know, 20 years or more.
That's good.
And I think that patience is a beautiful thing. Again, it's something God can help us with.
Mm, I love it. So patient.
I think that patience can sometimes be like the backsided weakness of being a really intentional parent or intentional person.
You should say that again because I think it went over people's heads because it definitely went over mine and I want to process
it. Yeah, well, I'll unpack it.
Just say, say what you say.
Or me say it a little bit of different order. I think for the intentional parent or intentional person or all-in passionate Jesus follower, we can have a backsided weakness of a lack of patience mm-hmm. with ourselves and with our kids. Mm-hmm. And I'll explain that a little. I think the longer, and I see it all over myself, but I think I'm seeing it more in myself now, looking back at like when my kids were, when we were just starting out and we just had like when Duke was a toddler or we had a toddler and a baby, mm-hmm. because I'm seeing it in a lot of women right now that I'm just like maybe a step ahead of, and we're talking a lot and maybe mm-hmm. they're asking me questions, is that especially when our kids are young, if we really want to be a really intentional parent, we can worry so much that things aren't moving fast enough, mm-hmm. that my child is saying no to me still. And we've been working on it really intentionally, really consistently for X amount of months, you know, or they're being disrespectful or they, and it, we can put all this pressure unintentionally
yeah.
on ourselves and our kids mm-hmm. that these things are not happening fast enough. I'm doing all of the things. This is really important to me to yeah. not just ignore it. That's a good thing. But when we lose the big picture of what are we trying to accomplish over the lifetime of that child, over my yes. lifetime yes. of following Jesus, mm-hmm. we've talked about it before. You can't microwave any of it, although I wish you could.
No.
And some of it is just day by day walking in humility and gentleness and patient, being patient with myself, being patient with my spouse, being patient with my kids, mm-hmm. that all I can do is every day ask God to fill me with his spirit, to be in his word, to be doing the things I know, to put myself on a path of formation. But it's God who does the forming work in me and in my kids. Mm-hmm. And that's on his timeline. It's not on mine. Mm-hmm. Yes, I can help my kids and myself and my spouse by the things that I'm doing. But I have to actually entrust the timeline and how all that plays out to God. And that requires a lot of patience.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it can be harder for those of us yeah. who want are to, all yeah. in.
I think you're right. And yeah. it requires trust because he can do what you cannot.
Yes.
And he knows in a way that we're not fully aware of how deeply rooted some of the anger and impatience
yes.
and abruptness is from yes. our childhood, from school, when we, you know, the school system yes. we grew up in. And look at the culture around us right now. Patience is not something that we would say is a strong cultural standard. Like, yes. you know,
it's a good way to say it. Yeah.
Especially in the political world right now, it's an impatience, anger, arrogance, they all work to give a person control. And that's the saddest thing is that, yeah. but that's not what we're trying to do is control our kids. Mm. We're trying to show them the way of Jesus so that they want him. Mm. Essentially,
yep.
Not to follow, just to follow his rules. We all want that for our kids, mm-hmm. but honestly, they want him to be present mm. and with them in every aspect of their lives.
Yeah.
And we can't communicate that with impatience or harshness or I can't believe you just did that, you know, as if yeah. we never did anything stupid. We don't get that by barking orders at them. And I did a lot of barking orders, like in those moments when wanting the house a certain way to look a certain way was more important to me than the souls of my children mm. or whether they wanted to follow Jesus. You know, I didn't think that at the moment, but yeah. I lived but that.
I'm really glad you said that though, because that's real.
Yes.
Because so much of the people listening, you have a divided heart. Like yes. you want both. You want a clean house.
And you think you can have it.
And you mm-hmm. think you can have it. And that's the biggest, like, that's the best, I think, lie of it all is that we possess this idea or the enemy yeah. implants that idea or both yeah. end that we can possess it. But that's really real because throughout the course of a day, I could feel so many feelings towards wanting to do better as a father, wanting to warm my kids' hearts to yeah. Jesus, but then lacking the personal boundaries with even work or different responsibilities coming in my life to actually be able to live that out.
Yeah.
And it's a weird, it's just
really hard.
It's really hard to just live into it. So like I just want to say thank
values,
you for saying
that. You know, and then the definition, I read it to you guys earlier from Scott McKnight's commentary. I like him. He's a New Testament scholar who brings it all back home. Mm. He calls this the meek, the humble, all the qualities that we're looking at here, the kind of person we want to be, are those who suffer So it's not like your house is always tidy and the kids are always respectful and everybody's always on time. Those who suffer and have been humbled and they lovingly trust God and hope in God's timing. I think then he went on to say the humble choose, this is hard, the humble choose to absorb unjust conditions, which unjust conditions are not just the big justice issues. It's justice in your home, you know, that it's not fair that the kitchen sink is full again. And last time you were in the kitchen, you cleaned it all up and nobody respected that. And that's not fair. Or whatever your thing is. The humble choose to absorb unjust conditions in a way that creates a calm, countercultural community of love. I mean,
that's it.
That a brilliant man to be able to say that in so few words.
So
that's brilliant, but it is brilliant. Elizabeth said something just, and Elizabeth is, I like to call her the prophetess of the Comer family. So when you were talking so beautifully about how this all works out, you said you can't microwave any of it.
Yeah.
I don't know where that came from. Like, maybe you've said that before. I've never heard you say it, but I just think that's a practical, you can't microwave patience. I want to be patient. Give me 1 minute. I hit number one.
So the opposite.
This is a walk. It's a walk. Yeah. It's a relationship. And it's how we respond.
That leads beautifully to the next one. You guys are doing a great job just leading to the next one. We need to be people that freely forgive. So we need to be humble, gentle, patient, but we need to freely forgive. And that's different than forgiving. Freely forgiving, of course, forgiveness is important, but freely forgiving almost has this disposition of generosity, of giving, it's mercy. It's giving somebody something maybe they don't fully deserve.
Right. Makes me think of, isn't there a scripture about keeping short accounts, Dad?
Yeah. Yes.
What that's is that old scripture? Fashion,
that makes me think of that. Of like that to me is like a different, that's a quick forgiveness.
Yes.
There's obviously the deep rooted things we need to forgive.
Yeah.
Those are really important and those play out in all of these moments. But that idea of keeping short accounts and
so
being
no
quick.
Kind of shaming in the process of forgiving.
Yes, that I'm learning that a lot. I've got one kid who is still greatly working on the initial response and has gotten really good about coming back and apologizing, but we're kind of stuck in, I'm wanting this kid to move on to being able to stop themselves from doing something to have to come back and apologize.
You're getting
and
I'm a little finding, impatient.
Yes. It's taking a really long time.
Yeah.
And I'm finding that I can easily express frustration and unintentional shame in my, I forgive you again, you know, instead of joyfully receiving this kid and saying, thank
Jesus
you for always coming back every time.
Yeah.
Because I'm growing a little weary of always forgiving the same thing over and over again. I'm not keeping short accounts.
Yeah. We have something going on in our home right now, which is really fun. And when I say fun, that's completely sarcastic. It is not fun at all. But Birdie's seeing this particular behavioral therapist and she is amazing.
Rocking our world right now.
But you know, when you have neurodiverse special needs, all the different spectrum, you need a whole different toolbox. You need all different tools. The regular stuff just does not compute. So we are like sitting here. It's comical. Like we're trying to help parents, right? But we're sitting here being educated every single day by experts and wonderful people that help. And we're learning. We're in the place just like you all are of listening of like, we're learning in real time. That said, like there's this new thing we've established in our home that's been given to us by some of our therapists and help. And, you know, like it's easy to say, I'm sorry and I forgive you, but there needs to be a repair. But now that repair is like very practical. And so each person got to pick two repairs. So, you know, every person said, here's two things that you can do for me that would be helpful to me. So it's beautiful. Like in many ways, it mirrors actually this biblical understanding of what a true apology
makes me think of the prodigal son. You know, he repents, he comes home to his father and he expects it to be treated like a servant and he's thrilled that he might be a servant. Yeah. So really repair.
It's repair and it's important. And so there's different ones on our list, but now it's become a language of the home. Like mine is to vacuum the whole house. Like it will bless me if you vacuum the whole house. I don't really care. It blesses her more than it blesses me.
I think I put your repairs on the list.
Is that what happened? Because I was like, I don't remember. Because organizing the garage has never been on my list. That is never going to be on my list. That, I don't care about that. That's what happened. I'm learning this in real time. So maybe. If anyone is like, not maybe. Maybe what that you? I didn't write that down.
I can't remember, but I'm pretty sure that's probably what happened.
So
I had two repairs,
and so if the kids do something, like especially with Birdie, like if she does something, or over responds or has whatever the infraction is, she has to apologize, but then she has to make a repair, and so it's like okay, she's like okay, you need to do a repair, and so hers was. She was saying to me like, oh my gosh, like I can't organize the garage. That's crazy. I was like, okay, well you can just vacuum the whole house, which is a lot. And she's like, okay, I'll do that. But why I'm telling you this story is because it has become this funny thing where Birdie will like come up to us and be like, mom, slow nose beer repair. She said this two things and I can't believe she said it. And she forgave me or I forgave her, but she owes me a repair, at least one or two, like just holding people hostage with their repairs. Like, and she's like, and Scarlett also owes me a repair.
But what it's done for
her, it's actually been very
because
good.
What the behavioral therapist pointed out is that yes, you're making her say the word sorry, but she has a great difficulty making the connection to how, what the action that she took, how it makes somebody feel. Yeah. So she was pointing out, yes, you're making her say the word because that's a part of your family culture, but it's not doing anything for her. Uh-huh. And there's nothing behind it for her.
There's no emotion, emotional connection.
And so for her, she's needed to be able to look at it differently. And she's making the connection that when I wrong somebody or somebody wrongs me, we have to do repair something.
We have to make it right.
Make it right. And so it, you know, like he set up so well, you have to do it very differently with kids who are wired very differently. But it's been really interesting to watch it shift the culture for everybody.
Yeah.
Because I think we were doing a lot of
the emotional side.
I'm sorry. And not actually working out all the feelings behind it, not actually getting to true forgiveness. And there's something about serving somebody that for both parties starts to settle the heart. And we have criteria around it. It's not for every time somebody.
Yeah, please don't take this and just do it.
Has
like, please.
A rude tone. Like in our, I mean, I'm not going to give all the details of what the criteria is, but we have some really big behaviors that we're working on with her. And so there's a set criteria of when it qualifies for that type of repair.
Yeah.
That everybody knows, that's clear to everybody in the house. Mm. But the reason we're sharing all that is it actually is getting us to a place of forgiveness, not just behavior management.
Yeah.
And I'm going to act like I've forgiven you, but really I'm just so angry, you know?
Mm-hmm. I could see where we could also teach each of your kids, it's not okay for somebody to treat me that way.
Yes.
And just say, you know, either nothing or... But that actually needs to be reconciliation in relationships if you want to have a healthy reciprocal relationship. Mm-hmm. And that's really important to teach kids in this culture that is just, you know, so rude compared to the culture that Phil and I grew up in, where, you know, good manners were really important and were practiced on every level of American culture. Yeah. Now, selective. There was just horrible things happening to people of color and, you know, whole groups of people were mistreated. But in your general day-to-day, going to the grocery store, parking your car, political speeches, they were all very, would have really followed these things, humble, gentle, patient, freely forgives. I mean, would have been more the stance, the posture of the day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, you mentioned rude. I'm looking at 1 Corinthians 13 because this is all in there. Yeah, this is love. This is agape love. Mm-hmm. It says, does not act unbecomingly, but NIV, I think it says love is not rude.
Yeah.
And this is where the short accounts is too. It says, accounts is an accounting term. So it says love keeps no record of wrong. So this is good to remember in marriage too. All the stuff we're talking about with our kids is true in marriage. So like to freely forgive. Which means to not keep a record of your, okay, that's the eighth. I've been telling you, and you keep doing it. In fact, I've been keeping track. That was number 9 in the last 3 days. That'll destroy your love. And then, you know, remember Jesus' word to Peter, how many times do I have to forgive? 7, Lord? He said, no, Peter, 70 times 7. You know, it wasn't like, okay, as soon as you get to, this you number, know, 490, yep. Is that what that is?
I don't know.
Then you don't have to do it anymore. No, like, the whole point is over and over and over, which is what God does for us. So freely forgiving because
you've been forgiven.
Yes. That's why we do it.
Yes.
You know.
And the fifth thing, and we'll close here, is content, to be a person that is calm and regulated, being able to be a container in the midst of that chaos.
Yeah.
Is you have to have a certain level of contentment. I think this one's interesting to me because it's funny how discontent leads to restlessness. Mm-hmm. And restlessness usually leads to irritability. And irritability often leads to tension in all of your relationships. Mm-hmm. So
angry responses.
And so I think that's an interesting piece. Like you being content. I was talking to someone just the other day, had lunch with a friend, and he said, I'm just so grateful to actually, none of my circumstances have changed. But honestly, like I feel so content and feel so completely okay with my job, my situation, my family, my future. Like there was a, he got the gift that really all of us want, which is, the real gift of Jesus, of contentment, of that space of like where I am, what I'm doing, there's brokenness, there's all of that, but I'm also at the very same time cared for, loved. Contentness is just such a big part of what it means to be a calm.
Yeah, that makes so much sense. Parent. Don't you think that contentment is even with where each of your kids is at right now?
Yeah.
And where your same thing. Husband and wife is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, I do hear in younger moms a lot of frustration that their husband is not where they are, especially when it comes to having studied and looked at the way of Jesus in the home. So, you know, they aren't necessarily seeing how that might clash with their family of origin and what they've brought into their fathering of their kids. But there is a really beautiful thing when we're content that God is doing a good work in him too. Mm-hmm. And he's doing it at the pace that he's able. And that contentment then leads to patience, right?
Mm-hmm.
And a gentleness towards those who are changing as slowly as you are, but in different areas.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The humble, like you said, I think it was the quote from Scott McKnight, but the humble choose to absorb the unjust conditions. Mm-hmm. And I think that as parents, there's a lot of unjust conditions that we find ourselves in. Bedtime? Mm-hmm. Let's talk about unjust conditions. Like, this is unjust. I have no energy and I'm supposed to like have a war with you tonight. Like, it's just the recipe.
Or even from day one.
Oh.
You know, a woman goes through pregnancy, goes through childbirth.
The unjust.
And then she's not going to sleep for months on end.
Mm-hmm. Unjust conditions.
It's unjust.
Unjust conditions. Conditioned.
So, but even as we're, you know, wrapping this up, I think it's incredibly important for all of us just to remember this cannot be done without the power of the Holy Spirit in your day-to-day, moment-to-moment life. And so this is a prayer. This is not just like, hey, do these 5 things. Like, listen, we can't live into these 5 things barely on our own. But in the power of the Holy Spirit, we can honestly work in these ways. Now, not perfectly, but honestly, he gives us the strength, the grace to be to be able to, when we are wanting to be prideful, to actually choose humility, when we want to be harsh, to actually be gentle, and when we want to be angry, to be kind and forgiving. And so the difference really for all of us, even as we're talking today, it's like, it's the Holy Spirit. That is the biggest difference that you need. Like, you have to partner with the Holy Spirit in your formation as a human, in your marriage, and especially with your children. Yeah. And if we want to be that container that we talked about at the beginning, it's going to take, it takes a lot of asking of the Spirit, and we need to be calm, regulated parents, but there's a lot of chaos, so we have to know how to do that with the power of the Spirit. So for everyone listening, take these 5 things, write them down, put them on the wall, do whatever you can to ingest them into your body, into your mind, into your prayer life, and be blessed as you are implementing this into your family.